News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 30th of April, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 8.5 minutes after the hour, we're looking at beautiful cerulean skies here in Rochester, New York.
It's supposed to get up to 70 degrees today.
What's that big yellow thing?
I know, the big yellow thing in the big blue room. Whoever sees that stuff anymore?
You can't complain. We've had so far very mild winter.
Right.
And, you know, we've been, you know, be able to get outside for a little bit. The temperatures have been pretty decent to get out there.
Just enough to throw us off. So you put your screen windows on, you start getting your lawn furniture out, and then it snows.
Hey, yeah. All I'm glad of right now, and as a matter of fact, it looks like right on through Thursday, they're not calling for any rain.
Yeah, you need that.
Yeah, because they're putting a new roof on my house, and that's the last thing I want them to do is sit there and have a thunderstorm come through while the roof is peeled off.
Right.
Like, no, thank you. But boy, what a mess that makes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had to take get a lady and go upstairs and literally clean the attic.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all the cedar shanks.
Yep. Yep, I'm sure.
Shingles.
I'm sure.
Mess.
All right, we're going to get to the phone shortly, but first, we need to tell you that, boy, I hope you're sitting down. There's another Internet Explorer bug. A security researcher has publicly disclosed a security flaw in Internet Explorer, the second unpatched vulnerability to be disclosed publicly within a week. The flaw lies in the way Internet Explorer handles certain dialogues.
Has anybody taken the time, I wonder, to compile a list of how many patches to patch the patches to IE?
Well, the thing that's important to note about this one is that there is no patch. Here's the problem. It may be possible for a malicious website to install software on a visiting system or take other actions that may compromise the privacy or security of the visitor. However, Microsoft has determined that the issue should be addressed in a service pack rather than in a security update.
Which means a year.
Right.
At least.
The French Security Incident Response Team rates the bug high risk. Secunia, which is a monitoring company, deems the flaw highly critical. Microsoft apparently
doesn't.
Couldn't care less one way or the other. So those of you who are still running Internet Explorer against our better judgment, by the way, need to be aware that that's still a bit of a problem.
I had a customer this week that was caught by the hole we talked about last week where Office files wouldn't open. Yep. and Outlook files wouldn't open.
Had to wait
open.
For the patch for this past Tuesday.
Right. Well, I installed all the patches that came out. I saw them on Wednesday, and it still didn't fix it.
And you're surprised why?
Yeah. Well, because the customer wants his computer back.
Well, that's a minor thing.
Yeah. So
use Word. Go to Open Office.
Well, yeah, I've had to reinstall Office Prime so he can get the email out of Outlook, so I can move him over to Thunderbird. So it's annoying. So the patches, you know, the patches didn't work in this particular situation.
I turned one client, you know, because they were having problems with Office and that, and I Microsoft Office, and I put them on Open Office. And they loved it, especially with the one feature where, and it's one thing that I really enjoy, is being able to take a Word file and export it as a PDF. And it does it automatically.
Without needing to buy Adobe Acrobat.
Yeah, you just automatically just say, export it, put it as a PDF, there it is. And I thought that was cool, being able to assign it to a PDF that anybody that he wanted to send this out to was going to be able to use it.
Yep.
I think we got another client there that's happy. Open Office. And it's free.
Well, I'm having a little bit of trouble with my web browser at the moment. I don't quite know what's going on here. But we're going to go to the phones. We're going to talk to Billy from Kendall. Welcome, Billy. What's your question?
How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm starting college in the fall, and our home computer, don't laugh, it's in the bathroom, and I just, yeah. I'm looking at laptops. Do you guys know what's hot, what's good, you know what I mean?
All right. Are you going to be going to school out of state?
No, it's right in New York.
Close to home, or?
Yeah, real close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes the best bet is wait till you get to your school preview and see what they have in the bookstore and see what computers your school recommends and supports.
Okay.
Yeah, because usually through the student union or whatever, they'll get package deals because of buying the volume.
Okay.
Although sometimes that doesn't mean they're good computers. It means they just got a good deal.
Right.
And plus, also the software. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Any software that you're going to need for, you know, your particular career that you're going into, mm-hmm. you definitely want to get it through the school because then you get the academic version, which will literally save you hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Okay.
I was just talking with a student this week about the news about you can put Windows on a Mac now. Mm-hmm. So, well, yeah, but it's $200 to buy a full retail copy of Windows. At our big local school, you know, where they have a site license, we can get a copy for $5.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
A lot of schools do that,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft is very big on that. It's the old...
They sucker you in.
It's the old Jesuitical thing. Give me your child before he's 70, he's mine for life. If you get these kids hooked on Windows while they're still in school, they'll demand it when they get out into the business world. Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
So, yes, definitely. Check with your school there. You could probably save yourself quite a few bucks.
Okay, thank you guys very much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Take it easy, guys.
You have
too.
Fun. All right, our next caller is Dennis from Victor, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Hi, fellas. My question is pertaining to... Norton Internet Security. I have 05.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question about it and to share a little information with the listeners, if it's okay.
Yeah.
I did a full system scan, and I found 10 threats. They all involved Hotbar adware.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, I called for virus removal through Norton and found out that I had to pay $70 to get that off of my system. And which was a little bit of a surprise for me. You know, my thought was, well, once you have the internet security, you know, you go in and find it, and then you can, you know, magically press a delete button and get rid of all of it. Well, that didn't turn out to be true. And I was wondering if you guys, folks, had any experience with that.
Well, it's been an issue with both Norton and McAfee, you know, since the beginning, is that you have to renew your subscription every year.
I did.
So if you've got 2005,
no, they're charging them on top of that. That's
really?
What I've been
exactly.
hearing from Norton. I mean, one, their 2006 product. The only good thing I can say is take it off your machine because the minute you put it on it, it slows it down.
To 2006?
Yeah, 2006. 2005 had its definite issues on because it wants to control your machine, you know, totally. I mean, it literally wants to take it all over, and again, it slows it down. And it reports some things falsely that it says it's an issue that aren't. And that's why I've never been a big fan of 2005 and 2006 of Norton.
Yeah.
We take it off, and then usually I'll put on AVG, which is a free antivirus program, Adware, SpyBot. And if you need a firewall for internet security, use Zone Alarm. Again, free.
Yeah.
And they work fantastic.
Yeah. The other thing that bothers me, guys, is what, you know, Hotbar comes in, they're embedded in my computer, nobody invited them.
Well, it's,
somewhere along the way, a little pop-up came up. And,
well, you were
and
installing
you
some
it.
Particular software package.
It came with some other program buried in the end user
or
license
an update, yes.
that you allowed Hotbar to be installed.
And snuck in there, right?
Yeah.
And see, you click so fast, going next.
Right.
If you tapped it a couple times, you might have blown past a screen where they automatically check, yes, install Hotbar on my computer.
It allows you cute little animated emoticons and backgrounds and beautiful images on your browser. Well, installs a bunch of spyware.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tech had me use Hijack This to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got rid of all the stuff he parked on my desktop as a precaution. And I left Hijack This on there.
Yeah.
Did a full system scan. It told me it's still in there. Get rid of it. So I thought, you know, that little piece of software that we used was okay to keep.
And, yeah. Hijack.
Turns out it wasn't.
Well, the problem is with a lot of the anti-spyware programs, if you run another program, it will see this one as spyware because programs like AdAware have the definitions of spyware built into them, so it knows what to look for. So the other program gives you a false positive.
Right.
The danger with Hijack This is it's so powerful in editing the Windows registries, you can easily make your computer unusable.
That's why, for the average person, that's why it's not on the Security Tango list, because it is so powerful, and none of us here want to be responsible if somebody accidentally, you know, eliminates something that they shouldn't have.
Right. So it sounds like they charged you for a tech phone call?
It was around $69 or $70 for that tech support.
Yeah. Sometimes they're flat rate per incident. Sometimes it's per hour.
Yeah. There was another fee of $39, which I thought I tried to get them, you know, to use, but they says no. I had to pay the $69, and I really didn't want to hang on to it. So, you know, I paid it, but it was. You know, I was taken back a little bit by it because...
Well, you should be.
Yeah.
Well, it's the company, you know, not to go too much in their defense, but companies are lowering prices. Market pressure is getting to be so high. They're charging for other things now. So you buy the program for $50, but if you have a tech support call, well, they're going to make their other $50 back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys. I just, you know, thought I'd share that, and thank you for your information.
Yep.
Keep up the good work there.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That's why we're here answering questions for free.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. We, I hate to hear that, but it is happening more and more. Lots of places are charging extra for all kinds of support along that line. We're gonna take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. What? Oh, yeah, got it. Thank you. Yes, indeed. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, who's keeping us on the straight and narrow here. He is good. We've got a lot more of your calls, so give us a call. It's 19 minutes after the hour and under beautiful cornflower blue skies here in Rochester, New York. We're, what?
I won't say anything.
It's 66 degrees. I'm loving that.
Oh, yes, I am too.
I'm loving that.
It's just your... we'll get into this later.
It may well be. What? No, for heaven's sake. Listen, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. Give us a call. You know the numbers. You know that we're here until 1 o'clock. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, and with me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And it's 24 minutes after the hour under cerulean blue skies. Oh, no, we used cerulean already.
Yeah, you already used that one. Periwinkle. Blue skies.
Periwinkle blue skies here in Rochester, New York. Periwinkle. What's wrong with Periwinkle?
She's Blue's friend.
She's Blue's friend. That's exactly right.
Although we've sort of graduated beyond Blue's Clues now. We're into Yu-Gi-Oh.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
And I got to sit between the two of you two.
Hey, it's kid shows.
Yeah, your grandson's getting up there. He'll start watching this stuff soon.
That's exactly right.
No, he's... Right. Which grandson?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Cody, he's beyond that. I mean...
Yeah.
Well, AMD. As you know, most of us here prefer AMD. I know Dave and I do. Steve.
Yeah, matter of fact, I'm running a dual core 3800.
Okay,
plus.
I hate you. Steve, of course,
it took me a while to get from my Pentium 3. Up to 2 months ago, I was using a Pentium 3. You know, even though I work in a computer shop, I own my own business. Guess who's the last one gets upgraded?
Oh, yeah, it's Shoemaker's Children. Exactly right. Exactly right.
Well, so I got to admit, it's probably the same in your house, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I
wife
do need
first,
a new machine.
Daughter
yes,
second,
yes.
Nick last.
Nick last, yeah.
Yeah, that's the wife again now.
Yeah, right. Right. Wife, daughter, sometimes me. AMD, however, has identified about 3,000 single-core Opteron processors, so you're good, that could produce faulty results if used under particular circumstances. The chip maker's been working with OEMs and other partners to identify the chips which were produced in 2005 and early 2006 and will help users fix the situation or replace the chips for free. They found out the situation while testing the chips for a particular high-performance computing customer. Engineers found that in a specific environment running floating point intensive code sequences, high CPU temperatures, high outside temperatures, that there was a problem. But generally only in tests, not in the production.
2 plus 2 equals 3.999999.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a screen's put in place to test all chips in, against that. The issue's not a large one. It's only about 3,000 processors. They make that in, what, an hour?
Yeah.
But they want to address it in such a public way so the customers understand the company will address such issues head on and will do whatever they need to do to fix the problem. So they are talking to OEMs now. They're talking to people who've built these machines. So if you have a single core Opteron processor, it probably is safe because, like I said, there's only 3,000 of these in the whole world. But they are working hard to make sure that everybody who did have a faulty one knows about it. Obviously, if you're getting a 64-bit processor, dual-core chip, whatever that's all about, you won't have this problem. So it's not that big a deal. We're going to take another quick break. But we're going to be, and for those of you who are on the line, we've got a couple of folks on the line. Please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, you can get on the line. If you're in the 585 area code, give us a call at 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's a free call on the Choice One toll-free line, 800-295-1180. And, of course, if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, star 1180 gets you to us. And like I said, we're going to be back right after these important little economic dramas with Dave Henright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, ably manning the board for us here in lieu of Rob Linton, who's one step ahead of the law. Somewhere, I believe, in the Midwest, although he could be up into the Canadian Rockies by now. We don't want to pinpoint him too closely so they can't find him. And I'm Nick Francesco, and you are indeed listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And we all say it together now. Say it together, sitting by your radio. Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 31 minutes after the hour, are you ready?
Go for it.
In beautiful slate blue skies in Rochester, New York.
I like that.
Okay,
slate blue's fine.
That?
Yeah, I think
slate
that.
Blue, just a little bit of, just a few hint of clouds.
Wispy
and
little clouds.
Wispy little clouds, and that's where we are. It is also, of course, Walpurgis Night. Tonight?
Eh?
Tomorrow is the feast of St. Walpurgis. She was made a saint on May 1st, and it's Walpurgis Night.
Okay.
Come on.
I ain't saying nothing.
All right.
That's fine.
All right. How about we talk about Sony then?
That works.
You don't want to talk about St. Walpurgis. We'll talk about Sony. Sony is readying. You ready, Steve? Sony is readying an iPod rival. You may laugh.
Because they already failed with their new Net Discman or whatever they call it. I don't remember the name of it.
It failed. It failed miserably. But they say they're developing a new music player that'll go on sale in the U.S. and other markets over the next year. They're going to have a companion download service and software. The player will be typically Sony, drawing on the company's strengths in areas like design and long battery life. Apple, however, has what they're calling a commanding lead in the music player market. That command would be about somewhere a little higher than an 80% share of the market. They've tried to do that. They've tried to unseat them before. The A-series Walkman digital music players are currently on sale only in Japan and Europe. There aren't a lot of details available, but we'll see. Sony, now you got to say, Sony did sell 4.5 million digital music players last year from March to March. So those are our latest numbers, 4.5 million. Music players. Apple sold 8.5 million iPods in the first 3 months of this year.
In the quarter.
You're right. So while Sony sold 4.5 million in a year, Apple sold 8.5 million in a quarter.
Sony's in an odd position, too, because they also own music.
Well,
so they make money when someone buys a song on iTunes.
Right. So really, it's an interesting problem for them. On the one hand, they're not going to...
Double-edged
sword. Right. They don't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. They just want to be the goose.
The one problem I have with all these, and I was earlier this past week, I'm going along the expressway, and there's one person's out on the left-hand lane. You know, and cars are going by them. Some people are even beeping. Come alongside the car, and there's the person driving away, totally focused, and you could see the head bopping, and you could see these white, especially in the one ear.
Yeah.
They got the earbuds in the ears.
Yeah, you're pretty much not supposed to do that.
Well, you can't cover both ears.
Well, they had both of them in, because I'm going by, and people were tooting. didn't have a clue. Just straight focus, and you'd see him bopping a little bit. And finally, somebody gave him a friendly gesture, and they moved over to the center lane at least and slowed right on down and just kept bopping along.
Well, as long as they're happy.
You can stop by Jesse Group, 7716 Victor Menden Road, 924-1920, and we have many different car accessory options for listening to the iPod in your car.
but don't wear both the earbuds.
Right.
So you have a hard time when I'm trying to change songs, or I've been listening to a lot of sci-fi podcasts. Escapepod.org is a really cool thing.
That's what's going to be banded next.
Yeah,
operating an iPod.
Well, that was the whole
while
joke.
You're driving.
That was the whole joke about cell phones. There are so many more distracting things than cell phones.
Yeah, right. I have to say I've lost my iPod. My daughter has it now. Hers. There's something wrong with hers. I gotta talk to you later, Steve. There's something wrong with hers, so she's stolen mine. I've been using my Mobi Blue, which is a wonderful little device. It is a music player. The thing I like about it better than the iPod is that it talks directly to my Linux box. It comes up as a hard drive on the desk, and I can just move stuff to it, and it finds it. It doesn't have to go through any sort of anything. So that's nice. But it's a little harder to use. The interface on the iPod is quite phenomenal. We're back to the phones. We're going to talk to Al from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
Good morning. I'm on a cell phone, so I'm going to ask you a question and hang up so I can hear you better.
Sure.
But it's in regards to spyware detection and removal. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion on the Acronis Privacy Expert Suite and also in regards to their backup program, True Image? Because I'm going to be thinking of purchasing them. I know there's a lot of free programs out there, and mm-hmm. I got them, but I wanted to know your opinion on this panel that are World of Wisdom.
This is the Acronis product?
Acronis, yes.
Yeah.
Privacy expert, and also while we're on the subject, their True Image Drive Image product. Okay, can I hear
right.
you?
Yep, yeah, sure, go ahead.
Thanks.
One thing on that backup program, I've heard a little bit about that. It does a lot better job than, say, Microsoft Windows.
No, that's damning with faint praise.
Yeah, really. Because Windows never has, nor will I ever trust, way back from the original Windows 3.1.1 or even DOS, when you used to use their backup program, it usually always failed in the middle of restoring something, say on the 10th disk of 11, and you were totally shot. So, but this one I've heard of, and it does a very good job as far as the backup. So, yeah, like you said, anything else you can do to help protect your data. But before doing any of the backups, and this is one thing I tell folks all the time, is before you're going to do any backup, make sure you scan your machine, have done a current virus scan or spyware scan before doing the backup. Because if you're just going ahead and doing these backups and then doing a virus scan or that after and it finds something, well, guess what? It already wound up going to your backup that if you do a restore, you're reinfecting the machine.
Right. As far as that's concerned, it used to be just a product, True Image used to be a product that only backed up the entire hard drive, which 99% of the time you don't need.
Yeah, no, you don't.
But the new version also does file-based backups. So you can, for example, say, take my My Documents folder and stick it somewhere. So that's nice. And there's a wizard that walks you through all those steps. So it's not a bad product at all. As far as their Privacy Expert Suite, it does everything all the rest of them do. I haven't heard anything bad about it. I haven't heard anything particularly wonderful about it. But there's about a million products out there, so it's hard to know. Unless it's spectacularly good or spectacularly bad.
Well, and then there's the ones that masquerade as anti-spyware that are in fact spyware. Admire their gall,
right.
Charging you for spyware.
Yeah. Right. Well, but in this case, in this particular case, Acronis is a known company, and their products are known. So. I can't say anything about it one way or the other. I'm not at all certain that it's not brilliant, but it certainly seems to be good. I haven't heard anything bad about it. It's really the best I can say.
One trick for folks, if they're looking to do backups, like you said, they usually wind up backing up the whole hard drive, which is kind of foolish to do anyways because it's Windows' way of saying you needed to clean off and reinstall anyways. But the key one that you want to do, folks, is if you look under, say, Windows Explorer, you'll see a folder that says Documents and Settings. Underneath that, if you click on the plus sign, you're going to see if you, say you, your wife, and or your kids, they'll each have their own name there or folder. Those are the ones that you want to back up. Because within those folders are all the documents, all your email settings, all your emails, bookmarks, and everything else that you're going to need that if you had to restore, those are the folders and files that you're going to need to do that backup.
Yep.
The rest is all just fluff that you need to reinstall anyways.
That's right. That's right. The first thing you should do when you set your system up is make sure all your programs save to the same place, My Documents. And you can create all your folders under there. You've got one place to back up. It makes your life much easier, much simpler, organized ahead of time, and you're way better off. All right, that music in the background tells me we're going to take another quick break. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, at 40 minutes after the hour, under lovely international Klein blue skies.
Somebody's got a thesaurus.
Yeah. I think that's what he keeps pulling up.
You're listening to Soundbites, the greatest computer show in the known universe. And it's you can hear us on the web, of course, and here on 1180 WHAM.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, under lovely Persian blue skies, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. And by the way, I don't think we can let this day pass without announcing that this is, in some ways at least, the birthday of the World Wide Web.
Did Al Gore say that?
No, CERN said that.
CERN said that. Tim Berners-Lee and CERN.
Tim Berners-Lee and CERN.
Check with Al Gore.
On this date in 1993.
Only CERN, 13 years ago.
Well, yes. CERN actually, you know, the underlying ideas of the web can be traced as far back as 1980. And then back in 91, Tim Berners-Lee posted a short summary of his World Wide Web project.
The military had the web going up.
On the web. They had the internet.
The internet, where you had to memorize and type arcane commands.
And you use Telnet and things like that. But in terms of the World Wide Web itself, it was on April 30th of 1993 that CERN announced that the World Wide Web would be free to anyone with no dues involved. This came 2 months after the announcement that Gopher was no longer free to use, and this produced a rapid shift away from Gopher and towards the web. And then it wasn't until shortly after that that the Mosaic web browser and the National Center for Supercomputing Applications was developed by the National Center for Supercomputing Applications. So really, the web started in 1993, not that long ago. To think that it took over our entire lives, and to think that
in a couple of years
we have listeners who don't know there was a world before the World Wide Web, which is kind of what makes
remember good old FidoNet,
waxing poetically.
Remember going to the library to look stuff up? Yep. I used to call librarians all the time. You could call librarians; they knew everything.
Yep,
everything. You could call them up, and they would find stuff out for you. It was great. Nobody else knew this but me. I got all my research papers done by librarians. It was terrific. I'd go down there and ask for their help, or I'd call them up with questions. But the web really became available to the world on this date in 1993. I'm just fascinated by that. That's pretty cool. Okay, we're back to the phones. We're going to talk to Pat in Newark, New York. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Hi. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, and I'm looking at a gorgeous blue sky with green leaves.
There you go.
Yeah, I got a
question for you.
Yes.
We have a Norton Internet Professional on our machine, and it's the 2004 edition.
Mm-hmm.
We're due to renew it in July, and with all the problems that Norton has been having, you don't want to go to 2006.
Right. That's a good thought.
Okay. So I have two questions then. Can I renew my 2004 just for the purpose of getting the updates, or do I have to go to 2006 if I renew?
Well, Norton doesn't make 2004 anymore.
Right, and the engine, see what they're going to tell you. Here's what they're going to
tell you. Well, you can update your virus definition subscription, but...
But where they're going to say, though, is, yeah, you can do it, but they can't guarantee that it'll keep your machine clean, is because they've updated the engine.
The engine is what actually searches for the antivirus, for the viruses. And an engine can only find the viruses it knows about. So as they update the engine, it can find new and different viruses. The 2004 engine will never find some of the newest viruses. So sticking with 2004 is not a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay, then the other part of that is I've gone on the net, as do everybody, and I've pulled up the Zone Labs products.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at three or four of the products that they have, which one do you think is the best one for me to get if I want to go with Zone Alarm? The Internet Security Suite, the Pro, or the Anti-Spyware, or just the Internet Security Suite?
Well, I think their Internet Security Suite is actually all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
It looks that way to me, yeah.
Yeah, so if you were to actually stick with Zone Labs for everything. For those of you who are not familiar with this, Zone Alarm is one of the programs that we recommend at the Security Tango at securitytango.com. You'll find it's a firewall, and it's exceptionally good at protecting your system. But Zone Labs, who makes Zone Alarm, also makes not just the firewall, but they have an all-in-one protection product, and that's the question that that's the product that Pat's asking about right now. The Zone Alarm Internet Security Suite. It has the firewall, the anti-spyware, the antivirus, ID privacy protection, email security, phishing blocking, spam blocking, IM protection, parental control, wireless PC protection. And it's only $50 a year. It's $50 for each PC. And that includes 1 year of updates, 2 years of updates. The product with 2 years of updates would be $99, $95, I think it is. So you pay for what you want.
My husband just handed me another one that they recommend for us. It's called Zone Alarm Internet Security Suite, and that's $69.95.
No, I'm looking at the Internet Security Suite, and for one machine, it's $50 a year, and that includes updates. Two PCs with for a year is $130.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what. Well, now that's list price.
Yeah, you can go search it on the web. And
right. So you may be getting it, you know, a deal somewhere along the line.
Well,
but
no. Well, I went into the buy now button and it says one user $69.95. Where did you see $50?
Yeah.
On their website here, protect your PCs with Zone Alarm Internet Security Suite. One PC, 1 year of updates. USD $50. $49.95. Or maybe they've screwed something up.
Interesting.
Check it out on the Zone Alarm webpage itself.
That's where I am.
No, I'm telling her.
Yeah.
That's where I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
ZoneLabs.com. And yep. Zone Alarm.
You're right. Now it says here Zone Alarm Security Suite, $100.
My husband says what he did was he put in the information for our computer.
Right.
They have different licenses for home, home office, small businesses, multi-user packs.
Or what you can do, which we recommend on the security page, is use AVG, which is a freebie for antivirus, the free Zone Alarm, Adware, and SpyBot. You don't have to pay anything.
Yeah, we recommend a collection of free utilities. And all of the programs, the free versions are sort of proactive. You run them when you want to.
As far as AVG will run in the background.
Right. So the Zone Alarm, the free version of Zone Alarm is a good firewall, runs in the background. If you want more control and more active prevention, you can pay for their commercial versions.
Right.
But I mean, it can save you, $100 by just using the free versions. And I know for a fact that AVG is even recommended by the Commission for the Blind, and they've been recommending it for a couple of years now to save folks money, and it does a great job of keeping viruses off machines.
How do I make sure that I get all of the Norton out of my system?
There is a Norton removal tool. If you go to the Norton, you can go to Symantec's website. There is a removal tool that you can download and run for sometimes, because Norton also has a bad problem of uninstalling its own products. So they came up with a removal tool. When you go to do an install and it didn't go quite right, they had to create this tool, and just look for the Norton removal tool.
Okay.
You run that off your desktop and it'll get rid of it.
There you go.
Okay.
We have to take a quick break. Not only is it Walpurgis night, this is also the date that Adolf Hitler committed suicide. And it's also the debut of the very first cartoon featuring Bugs Bunny, which really to me is the most important of the three. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, at 52 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
What? We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. Now, I got to talk about yet another Trojan. You know, we were just speaking about antivirus and anti-spyware and everything else. There's a new program out there. You know, God bless Western capitalism. There's a Trojan horse out there that freezes, when it runs, it freezes your computer and then asks for a ransom to fix it again.
Why didn't we think of that?
Why didn't we think of that? Apparently, you send them $10 through Western Union, and they will undo it. A sample of the Trojan horse that was found by Sophos, which is a security vendor, they've named it Ransom-A, which does not bode well. It means they're expecting a B, C, and D. There have actually been a few other viruses that ask for a ransom in exchange for releasing control of a computer. These are being called ransomware, obviously. They've been seen in Russia for a while now, but this is the first one to appear in English, and it hit us just last month. It's unclear how it's being spread yet, although Sophos is still investigating. Of course, they can spread in several ways, through spam or drive-by download that exploits a browser vulnerability, whatever. Once it's run, the Trojan freezes the computer, displaying a message saying files are being deleted every 30 minutes. It then gives instructions on how to send $10.99 via Western Union to free the computer. Hitting Control-Alt-Delete doesn't affect the bug. Nothing affects it. You have 30 minutes before the next set of files. It's like the movies, you know, we're going to cut off a piece of the guy and send him to you every hour unless you pay the ransom. Same idea here. And delete some files, delete some files, delete some files. The virus writer even, that's my favorite part. The virus writer is actually offering tech support.
For fee or free?
Free, apparently. If unlocking the computer doesn't work, the virus writer will give you an email address. Gives you an email address to write to them to get some sort of support.
Should be easy to find him. He's got a Western Union address and
if it's in Russia, we don't have extradition. Yeah.
What are you going to do?
This guy's got chutzpah. You got to admit it. You got to say it. All right. Entrepreneurship, it's out there for all of us. We're going to take another break while Rob Jason comes in and gives us all the news that's fit to use. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco. We're not going to hold you ransom, but we're going to hope you come back and join us just on the other side of the news with the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites, right here on the great, great 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And under Alice Blue Skies here in Rochester, New York, at 6 minutes after the hour, it's 66 degrees. It's beautiful.
Alice Blue?
Alice Blue.
Who was Alice, and why did she get a blue named after her?
Yeah. We're just lucky, I guess, that it was her, you know? Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what happens on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Frances would like us to remind you. She's become infamous now. She probably hates that she ever wrote to me about that.
We'll actually meet Alice.
Exactly. No, not Alice. Francis. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about all the problems people were having about the recent Microsoft patch. We wanted to know if you were one of the ones who had a problem. 302 of you voted, making it 128 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. 63% of you said not yet. Unfortunately, 14% of you, that's 43 votes, said yes. Yes, you had problems due to that patch. And that's actually, we're lucky, that's a little below the average. Actually, the Linux was next with 40 votes, and unfortunately, the Macintosh trailed with 29 votes. I'm sorry. It seems we have more Linux listeners than we do Mac listeners.
Or Mac listeners that had the problem in their Windows partition.
Well, who just, or who at least voted. This week's poll goes along with an interesting, what are they called? Blog posting that I read the other day. Slashdot has its own bloggers. They call them journals. But one of the people, Hog, whoever that is, wrote about, you know, do kids actually program anymore? A lot of educators, this person said, I keep finding myself in conversations with tertiary educators in the hard sciences, physics, astronomy, chemistry, etc., who note that even the geeks, those who voluntarily chose to major in the hard sciences, enter university never having programmed a computer. Do we care? Is this a bad thing? Is it a good thing? Is it a harbinger of the end of the world? And that's an interesting question. When I first started in computers, everybody knew how to program.
Yeah. You had to. There were no prepackaged programs.
Well, not only that, but the big thing was that everybody's program came with a programming language. Everybody's computer. Under Apple, you had BASIC. Under Windows, you had BASIC. And while you couldn't write great programs, you could write lots of little nifty utilities, and people did.
Save, it was a basic language,
Well, we saved them to tape. I can remember writing my first modem program, saving it to tape. You had to run the tape to
tape?
Get the program. Well, back
when... Yeah, my first program, you wrote the thing on paper and punched your codes into a hex... Your assembly codes into a hex keypad. When you turned the machine off, it was gone. There was no interface to anything.
Well, back at Kodak, I used to work on a Honeywell system, which was all punch cards.
Right.
And you sit there and talk about running quick to get to make the computer run, and you drop the cards?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking hundreds of cards.
Well, you know that all of the people in those days, they were mostly guys. All the guys who ran... who were the operators, you know, you'd bring your box of tapes of punch cards to them and they'd do them. And invariably, when they had a new person, they'd hand them an empty box of cards. And just before they handed it to them, they'd drop them all over the floor just to watch their reaction.
I've always thought my programming background helps in repair.
Yes.
You know how programs are supposed to work, which makes it a little easier to figure out why they're not.
Yep. Right. So the deal is this. The question I have, and I left out all the Linux and the Macintosh stuff, so I just want to know. The question is, I know how to program computers. The choices are simple, yes and no. So far, we've got 70 people who voted, and the no's are ahead of the yeses. 54% no, 46%. Yes.
Well, the Mac comes with a high-level scripting language, AppleScript.
Right.
And then you can use Automator to string.
ECMAScript.
You can use Automator to string together procedures to automate functions. And, I don't know if I'd call that programming, though.
Yeah.
Well, I'm willing to be generous at that point. Same thing with PHP and things, JavaScript. They're scripting languages, but it's programming, whether you're programming in Java or JavaScript.
Versus the days like when I used to do it in PL1 or COBOL, Fortran, I mean, Pascal.
Sure.
I mean, that's where you literally have to figure out the logic and create your different procedures and routines.
Right. I used to make my living programming in Forth. One of the few. At any rate, you can put in your vote in the poll. When you're done with that, underneath the poll, you'll see a yellow box. One of the links there is to give us your opinion. That takes you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. And you'll be able to enter more than just an opinion. I want to know what programming languages you know. We've got people who have a whole list of languages, Perl, Awk, Bash, C, PHP, blah, 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 blah. We've got somebody who programs in Commodore 64 Basic still. Somebody programming in Slaughterhouse and in Glock 9. I think they just found those on a list somewhere. I didn't really know that that you could do that. Here's somebody who actually met Grace Hopper. Wow.
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 Got to see her lecture on Lightspeed.
Right, exactly. She used to carry that 11.2 or 0.9 inches of wire around with her. 74 people have voted so far. When you're done with that, take a look around my website. I'll take a little self-plug here. I have a website called AskNick.com where you can get answers to your computer questions, but more importantly, websites, rants, raves, tips, tricks, all kinds of interesting stuff on my website. When you're done looking around my site, come back to Soundbites, where the forums exist, and you can meet some of the niftiest people in the known universe. You can also see our links and our FAQs, and of course, the great Soundbites shop, where you can buy some of the niftiest products in the known universe, all of which have the Soundbites logo proudly emblazoned on them.
And if folks haven't already, check out the Frapper site. That's for some of our listeners all over the U.S. Can just register there and know where we're hitting out to.
Right. It's link number 7 on the list of links. Hit the link tab. I finally...
Numbered
them? How long did this take me? Day? I finally numbered them. And number 7 is the Frapper list, where you can get you can join the growing community of Soundbites listeners on Frapper. So definitely do that. Join us there. And of course, there's all the stuff that we do here every week. Our next caller, Mark from Chi-Li, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. Hey, guys.
Hi there.
I have a problem that's kind of crept up on me a little bit with the display of my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
It started out once in a while where the laptop should display black color. It shows up in red. And over time, I've noticed that if I move the position of the laptop, open the cover and close it, it would come and go.
It's a very common problem with laptops because the video cable has to go from the bottom half where the logic board is to the top half where the screen is.
And it goes through the hinge and bends all the time.
So over the years of opening and closing the lid, you're eventually going to fray out those wires.
The wire, yeah.
Particularly if you have put any sort of odd tension on the laptop. The other day at...
Oh, like carrying it on one side.
Yes, well, carrying it on one side or dropping it, or as I've seen people do, pick it up by the monitor and swing it around to show somebody. Think about the torque that's putting on those two little hinges.
Well, I have a 9 and 10-year-old that use it, so that's odd
pressure.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
So it's just a matter of a cable replacement, probably not a big
deal. No, it is just a matter of a cable replacement, yes, but it's generally 4 to 5 hours of labor to take the computer apart.
Yeah,
and if you're lucky, the cable can be replaced.
But usually not, because most of them are attached
to the back of the
permanently
monitor.
Permanently to the monitor.
Right, so in most laptops, you have to replace the display assembly.
Cheaper way to do it is just pick up another bigger monitor and just hook it up to that.
Right. Don't use it as a laptop anymore. Use it as an external monitor.
Okay.
Or wait until it fails completely and then use it as an external monitor.
Use it with an external monitor. Now you can't carry it around anymore comfortably, but at least it still works.
Under warranty, you may be able to get it repaired. I've seen some. We had problems with a couple of HPs where HP considered it accidental abuse and wouldn't cover it under warranty.
Right.
Right.
Otherwise, you're looking anywhere. So it could be as cheap as, say, $350 all the way up to, depending on the display, up to $700 to get that whole display switched out.
Yeah, it's a 17-inch widescreen display, so we're...
Nah, you're probably looking at $1,000.
Yeah.
Which was more than I paid for the thing. So.
Right.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thanks, and enjoy listening to your show. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Sorry. Thanks.
That's the big problem with laptops is that most every part in them is proprietary to that specific model laptop, so you can't buy any generic pieces for it. And they're also tiny and so difficult to work on.
Well, the other big thing that I noticed a lot of folks having problems with laptops, they'll be using them, say, at home, and they quick close them and take off with them, forgetting to unhook the power.
Yep.
Which means that little connector in the back then gets snapped and broken.
Yanked off. Right. Now, if you're lucky, you can resolder that to the motherboard.
I found a place that I can, you know, get the replacement parts. But what folks don't understand is, well, it's just a simple connector back there. What they don't realize is you got to break the whole computer down to the day it was built to take that motherboard out, which is literally hundreds of screws. We have to sit out a sheet of paper. We divide it up.
Some of the Macs are worse. They don't use screws. They use compression clips. So you have to use a jeweler's knife or dental pick to gently pry. Right. Says that in the manual. Gently pry.
Yeah. Right. And then hope you don't spring it so far you never see it again.
Yeah, exactly. But we literally will sit there and take it apart and have to have different sections and write where that came from.
Yeah.
Because there's different types of screws.
I use a button bin we got at Joann Fabrics.
There you go. That'll do it.
And it takes hours to do that.
Yeah, it can.
You know, it's just brutal. So be careful. I mean, I'm seeing more and more of it because
Laptops are getting to be more popular now. Yes. Last year, laptops outsold desktops. It used to be laptops were underpowered.
The
now they're just as good as desktops.
The thing to remember is it's easy to take apart a laptop, but not if you want to put it back together.
Right.
All right. Because I've done that. I've taken them apart and stuck them in a frame and made a moving photo album thing. And I don't care what happens to the case. So I'm just like, bang, bang, bang. Yeah, I got it out. I'm good. We're going to take a quick break. Well, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. It's 17 after the hour, almost 18 after the hour. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole. I'm Nick Francesco, and you are indeed listening to the greatest, and craziest.
The longest running.
And the longest running computer show.
In the nation.
In the known universe.
Yeah.
We'll go as far as that. I don't know of another show in the universe that's run as long as we have for computers. On Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When you hear talk, you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I got to apologize to everybody. I believe I've been a little vague today on most everything, and I have an actual reason for that. Friday morning, got up at about 7, went through my entire day, went out to dinner at a friend's house and fixed his computer. I can be bought but for dinner and beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then went back to work at 11 o'clock at night, and me and my team moved our computer room till about, 8:30 the next morning. And I want to publicly acknowledge Alikia Parachuri, Nirmala David, Bob Pufke, Tom Craver, and Dave Ballard, the people who work for me who stayed all night long. And, of course, although he doesn't work for me, the magnificent Steve Good, who actually spent the entire night there with us checking on the network stuff and all of those things. And in particular, I want to thank him because he doesn't work for me. There's no way I could coerce him into it. But he was very nice to do that. And then I went home and I slept for a solid 8 hours, which I never.
It's unusual for
never
you.
Never. 4.5 hours is my max for an evening. 5 hours. Sometime.
You had to be tired.
I was exhausted. And then when I got up yesterday, I really didn't do much. I admit I did almost nothing. 24 hours, 27, 28 hours is a little past my limit nowadays. Yeah. Back when I was in college, you know, we pulled all-nighters 3-4 times in a row, and then as an actor, I would sometimes be up for 48 hours straight.
Listen, old friend, I've known you for many years.
Yeah.
You got to face one fact.
Yeah.
It's called, we're getting older.
I simply think of it as not being quite as young as I used to be.
Well, that's one way to look at it, but you know what?
Yeah.
It's your body telling you, hey, you aren't 20 years old anymore.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, that ride home was the toughest and scariest ride I've had in a long time. Back to the phones with Chris from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been having trouble with my computer for about 2 weeks. I could not open from the My Documents folder. I couldn't open my folders or files.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could open the my folders and files from my computer, but I could not do
yep.
a save as. Oh, you've heard this before, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. This was the... this
data miner?
What?
Is it data miner?
Well, no, no. It's a different virus.
It's Microsoft.
Okay. Called Microsoft. This was the problem with that update they had a couple of weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Okay, it was the Windows update?
Yep. It was one of those, one of the things that it often did was prevent you from opening anything in the My Documents folder.
Okay. That, you know, that makes sense. Because what I did when the problem initially occurred, I did a system restore. And I restored to a previous date,
mm-hmm.
and it would fix it.
Yep.
Until that update came in.
Until I did the
again.
Windows update.
And then it was back again.
You got it.
You
got
to go back to that date again.
Well, the point was that Microsoft should have released a fix for that fix by now. So if you do Windows update now, it should work.
No, I'm okay now.
Yeah, they did another update a week later, which fixed the fix.
Okay.
Which was this past Tuesday.
If you did a restore and then it did an update, you probably got both patches. So it screwed it up and fixed it in the same update.
Okay.
Isn't that nice?
Well, no, I did the system restore like about three nights in a row, and it worked for one day.
Right.
And then it didn't. But right now it is. But I did do a virus scan, and I did find Dataminer.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's a separate problem.
Okay. Well, I did delete that, but my question is still going back to System Restore, because I went to another website called Kim Commando.
Yeah, sure.
And she recommended that if you have a virus or spyware, you disable your System Restore and do your virus scans then, because
yes.
it might be lurking there. Is
we do
true?
The same thing on our website at securitytango.com.
Okay, I did go to the Tango site also.
Well, if you do the whole Tango, one of the things we do is tell you to disable System Restore.
Okay.
Because what happens is a lot of viruses hide in the System Restore area.
Okay.
While the System Restore was a great idea, Microsoft never protected it very well.
Right.
And consequently, pretty much anything can hide in there and come back to haunt you.
Our recommendation is
generally to just turn it off.
Okay.
She probably got that tip from our website.
Probably did.
Oh, I probably did. But if I turn that off,
mm-hmm.
okay, am I cutting myself out that I can't restore anymore?
That's right.
Right.
But you lose all your past restore points.
Right.
So once your machine is clean, immediately do a system restore.
Okay.
Turn it back on
Turn
and do a system
on.
Restore.
Okay.
That means you're safe from this point on.
Okay.
And then the next time you have to do it all over again. Unfortunately, in order to make sure your machine is clean, you truly have to get rid of System Restore while you're doing the cleaning, and that wipes out all your past restores.
Okay. That was my question.
And that's
and
your
you
answer.
You guys had the answer before I even finished my question.
There you go.
Okay. You're in my favorites website now.
That's what I love
thank
to
you.
Hear. Thank
okay,
you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you. Our next caller is Lance from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
Hi. Well, it's mostly comments. You're talking about programming languages.
Sure.
Of course, I've been around a few years, and so I've had time to learn several. Basic assembly, well, from core dumps, I learned assembly language. I dabbled in Pascal and C and... But I did a lot in assembly language over the years, and of course now I'm just a user.
Right.
I tell you, speaking of programming, I wrote something when Windows comes up. The keypad is digital.
Right.
It's numerical. So I cobbled together a couple of little things, only takes 8 or 16 bytes each, to turn that keypad off during boot up.
Yep.
I think I tried to send Nick a copy of that a couple of years ago.
I don't recall that, and I apologize, Lance.
It's all right. Num off is what I use, and I put it in the startup, not config, but in
the startup group.
Yeah. And it worked fine.
Cool. You know, I tell you what, Lance, it's people who can program who really are free. And people who can program an assembler, you write that assembly code, and it's tiny and it's fast. There's a guy called Steve Gibson who owns Gibson Research Corporation, GRC.com.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's written SpinRite and a whole bunch of utilities. All of them are ludicrously tiny for all the stuff they do, and that's because he hand codes them in assembler. So they're small, they're ridiculously fast, they're clean, they work great.
When I was taking assembly at RIT, I can remember the very first program I had to do, on the punch cards.
Yep.
And submit those. But it was, luckily, our professor came in on board after we submitted the first one, and he goes, "I've got some great news for you guys." We go, "What's that?" He says, "They just switched over to a new IBM mainframe. You don't have to use punch cards anymore, so we're able to do assembly right on the screen." Oh, what a difference?
Yes, I remember that.
And the Apple II, you could get into the monitor, which was basically an assembler. You could hand code your own assembler. And my boss, at the time I worked at a place called the Computer Center, my boss, Sekunder Sheikh, actually programmed assembler in his head. He would sit down at that monitor and just type in 6502 assembler code. Now, and that's really the only time I've ever been afraid of another human being.
Well, that's what we all did. You know, they talk about documenting your code. You know, you didn't write anything on paper. You typed a few lines in, compiled it, got an error. Typed a few more lines in.
He didn't get errors.
That's the weird thing.
That's the scary part. But yeah, back in those days, we were all programming stuff.
I remember teaching a continuing ed class of AppleSoft Basic, and this one nice little old lady was typing in her commands, and then typed run, and nothing happened. And so she called me over, and she had forgot to go into the editor. So every command she typed, it came back with an error, unrecognized command.
Right.
And then when she typed run, it said, "What program do you want to run?" And she says, "Well, the one I just wrote." And
we
didn't actually write anything.
You gotta
all those error messages meant something.
We were going to, at one point, write our own point-of-sale software. Because in those days, there wasn't any that existed, really.
Yeah.
So one of the bosses at the Computer Center, Mark Schrager, comes to me one morning and says, "Last night I started the point of sale program. So if you want to finish it, go right ahead." So I opened up his file. It said 10 REM point of sale.
It was
just a joke. It was very funny. But then Sekunder wrote the whole thing in assembler. It was ridiculously fast and small. And we could run the whole business on an Apple II because it was such a small program.
Yeah.
But those are, you know, programming is some pretty nifty stuff. And
it's an art. And a lot of folks, though, that get into it sometimes don't last long because it does burn you out. I mean, like I say, I did a lot of programming, and would I want to go back to it? No. Mm-hmm. It was fun while I was doing it because, like I say, I've done them, you know, assembly. I've done Fortran. I've done Pascal, PL1, Cobalt. And, yeah, they were all unique at the time. But after you do them for a while, you get burned out. So I applaud a lot of these other folks like that do programs for newer stuff coming out that we just take for granted. We put it in, set it up, and it runs.
Yeah. Yeah, and they don't know anything about it.
They don't have a clue.
Fair. You know, it's easy to be a user, and it's fine to be a user. I'm a user for most of the stuff nowadays. I do a lot of scripting nowadays. I use PHP, and I do a lot of stuff at the command line in Linux and like that. But I write very little Forth anymore. I write no Basic. I write no Pascal. I write a little bit of JavaScript, very little, no Java. And you get away from it after a while. I understand that. Our next caller is Jeff from Avon, New York. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, how are you guys today?
Good. How are you?
Fine. Thanks. I have a question with my wife's USB flash drive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She bought it. She installed it. It doesn't show up on my computer. Okay, doesn't show up when she clicks my computer.
Mm-hmm.
If we switch to a different user, my user, it shows up fine. Shows up right in my computer, and she'd like to know why it's not showing up. Any ideas?
Is she a limited user?
No,
I'm assuming you're under XP?
XP, yeah, XP home, and as far as I know, she's an administrator. But it didn't show up.
Did it ask for any drivers when you first put it in?
No, it didn't ask for any drivers. She bought one that was supposed to not have any drivers.
Okay.
Well, most of them don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. On my settings, it shows up, but on her settings, it doesn't. So I'm wondering if it's something's got checked or unchecked that should not be.
One question for you, though.
Yes.
When you put it in, it comes up underneath yours.
Yes.
And it shows up as a particular drive letter.
Yes.
If you switch to hers,
yes.
and then do a search for that drive letter. Does it come up?
I haven't done that.
Try doing that, because something got messed up in under her ID.
Yeah.
That, you know, instead of trying to, we don't have a long enough program to sit there and try to solve it for you. But if you write down the drive letter that shows up on her, your machine or under your identity, and then you go back under Windows Explorer under hers and do a search for that drive letter, it should find it.
Okay.
And then you can just create a shortcut out on the desktop. I know this is a workaround, but at least, you know, keep the marriage happy. And put that shortcut on the desktop, so when she plugs it in, she can just click on it, and there it is. She can, you know, open up a separate window as she's copying and pasting things from one to the other.
There's another thing that might be a problem. You may have, it may be trying to show up as a separate drive. Do you have more than one drive in your system?
Yes, we have a DVD and a CD-ROM.
Yeah, see, try this. Go to Start.
Yep.
Go to Settings.
Yep.
Go to Control Panel.
Yep.
Double-click Administrative Tools.
Yeah.
Double-click Computer Management.
Yep.
In the console tree under Storage.
Computer Management. Storage.
Click Disk Management.
Yeah. Disk Management.
Right-click the USB flash drive, then click Change Drive Letter and Path.
Okay.
Then you got to click Edit. Put in the drive letter you want and click OK.
Maybe one of your CDs is hard-coded to drive F and your flash drive wants to be drive
exactly.
F.
Exactly.
That could be it, yeah.
Exactly. So try that.
Okay.
You know, usually they want to be H.
Yeah, this one's F.
Yeah, see, so yeah, try that anyway and see what happens.
Okay.
That happened on a Dell laptop.
And God bless you for writing all that down, as I said. It was obviously he was writing it down. We get people who say, yeah, I'll remember that, and then the next day.
Or hold on, I'm trying to click through it.
Yeah. Right, or hold on, trying to click. Just write it down, try it on your own. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Take it easy.
I had a similar problem like that, trying to hook an iPod up to a Dell laptop, and for some reason, the laptop came with the hard drive as D.
Huh? Really?
Yeah. So the iPod was coming up as D and wouldn't work.
Well, yeah.
Because there already was a D. So why in the world is the main hard drive D?
Yeah, it usually defaults to C.
Yeah.
Sometimes Windows actually does that. I was a guy I know had to install Windows like four times before the drive came up as C.
I was thinking maybe, you know, some models have those hidden partitions with the restore stuff on it. Maybe it was seeing that as C.
This was a brand new installation, but it just kept coming up as D. And I thought to myself, why would you even try that four times? After twice, you got to think the computer's not going to do anything different. But guess what? It did.
It did.
Yeah, usually the restore partitions are usually the D.
And they're hiding, so you can't see them anyway.
Right. Yeah. All right, look, we're not hiding, but we are taking a quick break. At 37 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you on what continues to be, and we hope will always be, the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, 66 degrees, under beautiful denim skies here in Rochester, New York, this is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. And before we get back to the phones, another little bit of news. The MacBook, the new MacBook Pro. The MacBook Pro is now available in a 17-inch model. As one of our callers had a 17-inch notebook, there's a new 17-inch MacBook Pro laptop. You have the option now also to choose between two Intel Core Duo Apples. Very subtle differences between the current 15-inch and the new 17-inch model, besides screen sizes. The 17-inch MacBook Pro will have a higher resolution display, of course. It does not abandon the FireWire 800 port, which makes many people very happy. You get that extra couple inches of space, and you can put back your FireWire port. You get double the speed on the included optical drive. The DVD burner is at 8X, whereas the 15-inch has the 4X drive.
It's also a double layer. The old one was single layer.
It is a double layer drive, right? And the same stuff in the 15-inch MacBook that you love, like the MagSafe adapter, the EyeSight camera built in, the Express Card slot, front row's 10-foot multimedia interface with the remote. It's got Intel's dual core, so you can load XP with Apple's Boot Camp. And it's about the same price as the original 15-inch MacBook Pro model.
Works.
How do you beat that?
I was going to mention earlier when we were talking about tripping over the power cord and breaking your power adapter.
Yes.
That new MagSafe connector is really cool. It connects the power cord to your computer by a magnet, which is easily removable. So when you trip over the cord or pick your computer up by forgetting to unplug it, it won't damage that connector anymore.
Right. Just the magnetic connection pops and you're done.
Of course, it now does mean we have to stock another style of power adapter.
Yeah. But eventually I suspect that one's going to become more standard.
Yep. And what's interesting is if you take there's only a $300 price difference between the high-end 15-inch and the 17-inch. If you custom configure the 15-inch and add the stuff the 17 has in it already, the bigger hard drive, the better. You can't get the better optical drive. It costs more than the 17-inch does. So the 17-inch is now your best deal. Hey. Getting the larger screen and the bigger hard drive and the dual and all the bells and whistles.
So flock on down and grab them. And, of course, you can do Apple's Boot Camp to do that. Although that's not what I want. I don't want to be able to reboot into another operating system. I want to be able to multi-run them virtually.
Right, that's Parallels Visualization.
Right, exactly. And that would be much more interesting to me than multiple booting. Because I boot into Linux and never get out of it, frankly.
There's also some interesting rumors that Apple is building the Windows APIs. So that you'll be able to run Windows programs without needing any sort of virtualization or dual boot.
Virtualization?
Right, yeah. And
that would be cool.
We somehow, I was just reading some of the Apple training materials on Boot Camp. They're very quick and repetitively pointing out that they will not support Windows. They will not bundle Windows. They are doing this because some of their customers have Windows programs they absolutely have to run, and now you can. So you can get the advantages of a Mac, and when you absolutely need to, reboot into Windows. So I don't see Apple adding Windows functionality into the Mac OS.
Yeah. Right. What they do as an exercise for themselves and what they actually publish as a supported product may be two different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Our next caller is Colleen from Perry, New York. Welcome, Colleen. What's your question?
I really enjoy your show, and I know you've talked before about getting the gold CDs or DVDs for information storage.
Yeah.
But I've been having trouble trying to find that. Where do you find these superior quality CDs? I don't know if I'm looking for the right thing. Is there a certain brand, or is there something on it that says?
It used to be the Kodak Gold InfoGuard were the best brand for longevity, but they don't sell them anymore.
Right. What is it, Verbatim?
Well, that was the Kodak brand.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the name.
Basically, the problem is most of the computer stores only stock the cheapest ones because they know that people want to buy the cheapest ones.
Yeah, that's the problem I'm seeing. That I don't see anything else besides that. Is there some place you can go on the internet to find these? Or I haven't really found turned up anything.
Yeah, there's places all over the net. I just did a Google search for gold CDs, and they're still advertising Kodak's safe storage for up to 300 years.
They are, okay.
Finding actually where to buy them is another point.
Right.
But sort of one of the back issues is that, they'll last for several years, but you're still going to want to reburn them onto some other media because we're seeing how fast the storage media changes.
Right.
From CD to DVD. Now you got to find a better brand of DVD.
Zip and Jazz and SciQuest have all fallen to the wayside.
Mm-hmm. So if you're constantly, even if you get the cheap ones right now and you're burning, say you can get a spindle of 100, relatively cheap. And just do a new burn to that new CD and throw the old one out.
Well, the problem with the really cheap ones is they can fail in a few weeks.
Right. Right. You want to buy fairly expensive ones and assume they will last a maximum of 5 years. They may last 30, but assume a maximum of 5.
Yeah, it's the Mitsumi phyloalicine dye. Gives it the goldish
Maxwell,
color.
Right. Maxwell.
Silverhammer. No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Sorry.
Max Store?
Max Tower? Yeah. There's a number of brands out there that you can get the gold ones with.
I've been using the Maxtels.
Yeah, the Maxtels are good.
Maxtel. Maxtel?
Sony. The Sony ones are good also. I mean, you know, for this 3 to 5 year life.
Okay.
So, again, you know, like Steve was saying, the minute you get into one, you know a couple years down the road, and we're already pointing that way, is going to DVD for backup. Who knows what's going to come after that? So, you know, you're always going to be updating it probably within that 3 to 5 year time frame anyways.
Okay.
All righty?
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take... What?
It sounded like it misfired there.
No, it was just an interesting choice.
I just forgot to turn it down. I just want to make sure you guys were still awake.
Thank you, because like I said, after
playing the sleepy music isn't
hours,
helping.
Right. Helping?
I know,
helping?
Really.
All right.
He was half asleep.
While we throw a couple of dictionaries at Steve, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get to you shortly. If you're not on the line, why not? Although it is getting close to the end of the hour. So, well, we'll be back in just a few minutes. It is 49 after the hour with the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that, as we all know and I've said many times on this show, is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. At 54 minutes after the hour, we've got Claude.
Well, hang on. Before we go back to the... Hang on a second, Claude. I was doing some Google searching for Kodak Gold CDs because they were, right, you know, the best of the brand. And I found this new company called KMP Media that is still selling Kodak Gold CDs. So I looked them up. KMP Media, 300 State Street, Rochester, New York. They are Kodak.
We know what the K stands for.
Kodak Media Preservation, KMP.
KMP, Kodak Media Preservation.
So it looks like the Kodak Gold CDs are back, last up to 50 times longer than regular CDs, for archival of digital imaging. And it does use 100% 24 karat gold in its reflective layer.
So it's not going to be cheap, but it
doesn't
is
oxidize,
be...
doesn't break down, doesn't lose your data.
Exactly. All right, now our next caller is Claude from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Claude. What's your question?
I got a question on data encryption. I'm running a wireless network, and I have EEP set up, but I was wondering, how do I get it changed to WPA?
You don't get it changed. Your router has to support it. Both your router
and
your computer.
And your operating system.
And your operating system have to support the same encryption types.
So okay, I have a linked Cisco router, and I called them. They said it does support it. And I have a wireless card in my laptop. And last I checked with Microsoft, they said it supported up to the new driver that I had installed for that wireless card. But somehow when I go to that properties and click on the wireless network, it just come up with EEP.
You have to change it in your router first.
Okay.
In the router setup screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the remote computers can be able to run it too.
Okay. All right. Makes sense.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Our next caller, Frank from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
I have Windows XP Professional. And over the last couple of weeks, I've noticed two things. One, that my McAfee antivirus will unexpectedly quit. And if the little square goes black, and if I mouse over it, it says virus scan disabled. I've run the security tangle, find no problems, and I can reset it or restart it, and it'll run for an indeterminately long amount of time before it stops again. The second problem I'm having is if I start an application, the window opens for the application, but it may be 10, 15, 20 seconds before the application actually starts. And any ideas what's going on?
Do you leave your machine on all the time?
Yes.
Let me start with saying reboot it.
I have done that.
Oh, all right. I'm suspicious
Yeah, there's something.
Even though you've run the Tango.
Hardware-wise, there could be something else going on.
Right. It could be a hardware problem. It could easily be a memory problem.
Okay, I've run MEM.
MEMtest?
MEMtest 86.
Right. How long did you let it run?
Like 15, 20 minutes?
No. 24 hours at a minimum.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Because it runs eight, particularly if you set it to run all the tests, which you should. It takes a good 10 hours to run, and you should let it run at least twice. So let it run for a day, and that will tell you whether there is any problem with memory. If you let it run for 24 hours, I guarantee you, you can trust the answer you get back. But letting it run for 10, 15 minutes tells you nothing.
That's just getting it warmed up.
I mean, there's eight separate tests, particularly if you've got a lot of RAM. There's eight separate tests, and they run. It takes them a long time to run. You may not even have finished one pass of one test in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would suggest that you run MEMtest 86 for a full day.
Okay, and how about processor diagnostics or no?
Certainly can't hurt.
Yeah.
If you've got any that came with the system, there aren't any good, well-known standard ones, unfortunately. I wish
for freebies, because I've got one, but, you know, that cost me some bucks to run.
A lot of bucks. And that's the problem with you. You can't run a processor diagnostic on that processor. So you can get like a board that you plug in that lets you run a diagnostic.
I've got some software that I can do it, but it's not a freebie by any means. And we literally beat the snot out of the motherboard, the memory. I mean, I can do everything.
Yeah.
Okay, the one I have is the Intel stress test.
Well, that's nice, but it doesn't do everything.
Okay.
It's a place to start.
Yeah.
Right, it's a good place to start. I'm afraid we have to go. We're done for another week. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I want to thank everybody who called in. Please don't forget to vote on our website, soundbites.org. Check out my website, asknick.com. Check out the Security Tango CDs and my blog at securitytango.com. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, who kept us on the straight and narrow for the last couple of hours. It's 59 minutes after the hour, and we're done for another week. I want to thank you all for listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. See you next week.